Why shouldn't we rule ourselves again? It was the dragons we bowed to. And now the dragons are dead. There sits the only king I mean to bend my knee to. The King of the North!
SpecficMedia.com presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast. With hosts E.G. Holyfield, Christiana Ellis, Chooch, Viv, and Nuchus.
Welcome to episode 10 of the Beyond the Wall podcast, brought to you by SpecficMedia.com. I'm hosting tonight. I'm Vivid News. Our usual host is off saving the world again. You know, he's got that ability, so he keeps getting tapped. E.G. Holyfield is not with us tonight, sadly, to discuss episode 10, the finale episode. But I do have my husband, Chooch.
Hey there.
I have Christiana Ellis.
Hello.
And Nutty Nookchop.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I sound like PG again.
Yeah, Nutty's sporting the ultra sexy voice tonight, so I guess we won't bother trying, huh, Christiana?
Oh, sure. We don't need to make it a competition.
No. We'll just give this one to Nutty.
That's who this voice is not.
Well, let's start out with the opening shot.
Hair on the blade.
Hair and blood dripping on the blade at Baylor's Sept, a bloody and hairy ice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that happened.
That happened.
Just in case there was anyone who was still thinking, well, we didn't actually see his head fall on the ground.
We did this
that
time.
Might be alive. Yeah. He might be.
Well, and you know, after you made that point last week, Christiana, I went back and looked, and the blade certainly went through his neck. Certainly did. Okay, so the head didn't land and squirt blood, but we certainly saw some more detail this week. It was pretty gruesome, and I'm really glad that they shot it the way that they did, with kind of the focus not on what was happening on the Sept. It was kind of like how you would hope Arya would get it, kind of like as these blurred images without any thing really specific, until she sees her dad's corpse dragged off, of course.
Yes.
Thoughts?
You know, it's interesting because I think for almost every character except maybe Daenerys, it almost felt like this was the first episode of second season instead of the last season finale. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just in terms of it really sort of felt like Ned's death was the big thing that just had ramifications everywhere, of course, except for Daenerys, because she's over across the Narrow Sea. But so in a lot of ways, it feels like if not for Daenerys' story, episode 9 would have been the season finale. As a result, almost all the scenes, except for hers, feel like, okay, what now?
I also think if they were greenlit for 2 seasons, they might have ended the series with Ned's death. Because every other book ends on a cliffhanger. Spoiler alert, every book ends on a cliffhanger, except for book 1. So this could have been, you know, had they known that they had a second season, they might have chosen to end with Ned's death.
He probably didn't know he'd have a second book published.
A second. Well,
I think that there's an element of just the timing involved too, because obviously since Daenerys' story is, you know, it's happening in parallel, but there's very few direct connections that force a certain timeline. And so certainly there could have been a way, I'm sure, for them to instead, you know, just time it all so that her getting the dragons and Ned Stark's death happened in the same episode.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying they should have done that, but I mean, it just kind of worked out that way, I guess.
Yeah.
I agree.
And I forgot to do what PG always does. Overall, short and succinct general thoughts on the entire episode.
When it fades to black, my thought was, now we see where the money went. That's where the horde money went. That's where the battle scene money went, was making the itty bitty dragons.
Yes.
We got dragons and they looked kick ass.
They did look kick ass.
Agreed.
How about you, Nutty?
Rory approves. He was roaring right next to me as we watched it. I feel like what Christiana said is there is a lot of book two in this last episode also. Like, there's a lot of things that they moved from book two, I feel, to this episode. But I really enjoyed it. It made me happy. And, you know, the dragons. I mean, how can you not love the dragons? And they don't have to worry about the CGI dragons misbehaving. So we won't have the whole problem that they have with the wolves. Where the wolves, I found out what one of the big problems with the wolves are. They can't train wolves the way that they can most animal actors. Wolves are much harder. So every time there's a take with a wolf, they do that like 20 times. And the actor has to get it 100% correctly every single time, because the wolf will only get it right once.
Mm.
So there's a lot of scenes that they didn't have the wolves, because it just would have taken too long to shoot. So anyway, so dragons, I'm very happy with the CGI, because it means that they will be in more scenes. And I don't want to hear, we can't afford it. You're doing a series about dragons. Get over it.
Yeah. Christiana, well, your overall thoughts?
I was just now thinking, it's like, oh, I don't know. I think they should have used real dragons.
Well, they could have. Rory was totally up for the part.
But anyway, so I liked the episode a lot, although, you know, in a larger context, I kind of said already that it felt almost more like it felt more like a first episode of a new season instead of a finale.
Yeah.
Which is not a complaint per se, but I wonder if maybe they felt they had to do Ned's death and then have another episode, just because there was this whole issue of, you know, concern maybe that people would feel like, oh, this is the main guy and he's dead.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if they ended the season there, people would say, well, what is there to turn into next time? So they needed to have more stuff happen after that to show, oh, wait, no, the story does actually keep going.
Yeah. And I mean, that's true to the book, too. I mean, I went through everybody's final chapter just this afternoon, and I only found one difference between the book, and it's just a minor thing, and everything else was true to the book. And so it definitely played in the timeline, and I think you're probably right. I think they had they started episode 10 with Ned's beheading, that it would have just, we all would have just been like, even those of us that read it would have been like stunned and wouldn't have been able to really absorb what was going on. We all needed a week to process, mm-hmm. to grieve, to go through the stages, come to terms, and then see his head on the spike.
So I have a quick question, and it's not series related. It's book related. When everybody read about Ned dying, did anybody like have to take a break from the book?
I don't remember. It was so long ago. I really don't remember. I remember I was very upset, and I just kept flipping the pages. But I don't remember having to stop, put it down, and walk away. It was just too long ago.
Because I've heard that from a lot of the people that have read the books. They said they were so angry they had to put the book away for a while before they could return. And me, I remember just ripping.
I did the same. I didn't feel like I had to put it down. It was more like, holy crap, now what's going to happen?
Mm. Yeah.
So I just, like, if anything, it invigorated me to go ahead and tear through the rest of the book.
I guess the last episode, it didn't really have that big of an impact, because even though I didn't know specifically he was going to die, I was pre-told, you know, everybody kept saying he'll kill anybody. So
yeah,
I don't think it was that big of a surprise when it happened. You come in so late to it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a confession of the opening and the map. You know, I've been looking closer to the map for changes, and it had occurred to me watching the opening when they first showed King's Landing, and they show the stag sigil and starts turning. I had this brain fart for half a second thinking, well, wait a minute. Shouldn't that be a lion now? Oh, wait. No, he's a Baratheon, isn't he? Oh, wait.
Well, technically, you know, it's a,
yeah.
Everyone knows, thinks of him that way. Anyway.
He's a Baratheon until we know differently.
Right.
I tell you, one additional just note on the whole issue with Ned is just that I have really enjoyed, since that episode premiered, talking to friends and, you know, finding message boards where people who hadn't read the books are reacting to that. Mm. And, you know, I still have to say, for every person that I hear speculate that people would feel betrayed – I hear 10 people say, I didn't feel betrayed. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah. Definitely cranks the drama up quite a bit.
People definitely felt betrayed. That guy, Otaku Assemble, who does the YouTube, reviews, he was so upset he wouldn't record that night, and his roommate came over and recorded him, and he was very upset, so much so that that video Sean Bean has watched and talked about in a New York Times article this week. It was really funny. I had somebody tell me that we as a podcast should have warned people. I shake my head and I say, no, you can't. This is one of the reasons why I told people, especially listeners of my podcast, before the show came out, I told them, you're going to want to read the book because there are some spoilers in that you want to read rather than see. And I think that that was one of them. I think it was probably more powerful and easier to handle when reading because you knew how much more of the book you had left than just watching it on the, you know, was it the second to last episode? I can't even remember now.
Yeah, it was 9.
Yeah, on the second to last episode. So
I'm sorry if anybody feels like we should have warned them, but we've said from the beginning, we're not going to spoil things.
We have a drinking game. Yeah. I mean, come on.
So you read the book if you want to know what's coming is my thought.
I'm sorry if anybody felt that way, but I don't really think it's reasonable because on the one hand, I mean, any sort of a warning more than we already provided would have represented a massive spoiler that wouldn't have been fair.
That'd be like saying, I'm speaking over you.
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that would be like saying that Bruce Willis is really dead and Wash died and all of that because spoiler alert to those, because if you haven't seen them already, why are you listening to this podcast?
the time difference on those is a little different than this.
But that's what it would have been like. It would have been just like when Slice of Sci-Fi spoiled Serenity, and just like if somebody had spoiled you about Sixth Sense, because you wouldn't have wanted somebody to do that. That's how I feel.
You know, King's Landing, we see, you know, Ned's definitely dead and all that. We see Arya, and I forget the other guy's name.
Yoren grabs Arya.
And when I had read the book, I guess I wasn't paying attention
Yoren
to the names.
Yoren of the Night's Watch, yes.
Or if they just didn't say his name. But when I had read it, because he said, hey there, boy, I thought it was Serio.
Yeah.
Because of their first meeting. And then seeing that it was Yoren, I'm thinking, oh, did they change that? I thought it was Serio, but...
I don't think they said his name because it was Arya's point of view, and she didn't know his name, but she finds it out later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think that... But I can totally see that, you know.
I was a little disappointed when we saw that scene. And I thought it was going to be Serio.
Oh, Serio is still alive. So yes, Yoren grabs Arya, and he chops her hair off, and tells her that she's a boy and that she's going north and all of that good stuff. And
Before we move on, I don't want to put words in the mouth of people who haven't read the books and assume what their reaction would be. But I felt like, even though I had read the book and I know who it was that takes Arya out of the city, I felt like I didn't remember who he was at first. I know we saw that actor before, but at the same time, I just sort of felt like, even though there's that scene where he's like, do you know me? Do you remember me? You know, and I felt like if I hadn't read the books, I would be going, no.
Yeah, because he resembles the Hound, too.
Yeah, a little.
Mm. Lots of
especially the Hound's good side. Yeah.
Not until he says... You know, we're going north. Your dad gave me the pick of the dungeons. Oh, okay. That's right.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed while he was dragging her away, I feel weird bringing this up, but Maisie Williams is starting to grow up, and you could tell when he pulled on her shirt. I'm wondering how that's going to affect the seasons as this young girl grows up, because Arya is supposed to be a lot younger. She's not supposed to, you know, she's supposed to pass for a boy.
Well, it'll be the same as with the Harry Potter movies. So, you know, they'll deal with it. You know, before Harry Potter, before we got to the end of the Harry Potter run, I was like, oh, that's just not going to be right. They need to swap out the actors. And in my mind now, I would have been devastated and unforgiving had they swapped out the actors. So if they're smart, they'll keep her and just roll on with it.
She'll just have to wrap her chest.
And then we go to scene two, which is Bran's dream with the three-eyed crow, which I thought moved eerily seamlessly to him being carried by Asha down to the crypts. Mm-hmm. That was just like really well done. It threw me for a minute. It's like, why is he walking with a hump? Why is his hump at his butt? What's going on? Anyone have thoughts?
Well, not about that specifically, but I was certainly, I was A, excited to finally see Shaggy Dog.
Yes.
But also just, I'm laughing at the only time Rickon shows up. We saw him in episode one where he's laughing, sitting on a horse or something. And then his only two appearances since then have been to be creepy and like creep out of the shadows and say something spooky and then disappear into the darkness again.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
PG gave me very few notes, and one of them is Shaggy Dog sighting. Rickon comes in. Poltergeist motherfucker.
Rickon of the corn.
Yeah. I really think it's a shame that they didn't have, because I don't even remember him sitting on horseback laughing. The only scenes I remember Rickon in is him standing at the end of the row when the king and everybody gets to Winterfell in one of the second episode. Mm-hmm. First episode.
Him sitting on the horse was, it was when Bran was aiming with the arrow and he missed, and then Robb and Theon were laughing at him.
Oh, no.
And then Rickon was kind of, there was just sort of a cutaway to him like laughing too, because everyone else was laughing.
Oh, I missed that. Yeah, I only remember the two creepy Rickon scenes, and I think it's a shame that they don't show him as more normal, childlike. Because now everybody's just going to think, this is a freaky kid from way back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Although he kind of is.
Yeah. Chooch, any thoughts on the scene?
We saw the Twitter network in full effect. Because, you know, when they say, you know, father was here last night or whatever, and it alludes to that the beheading was that day or, you know, the previous day. Mm. And then, boom, they get the news. And I don't know. It seems like an awful lot further than a raven could fly overnight.
Mm.
But I mean, you need to move the story.
Yeah, and, it's the time progression thing again.
Yeah, it's Twitter. I think that's the perfect way to think about it.
Yeah, and I really think that the actress doing the role of Asha, she's giving it a lot more depth than I ever gave the character in my mind and reading the book. So cheers to her.
I agree, especially this early. I mean, I feel like she, you know, as I remember it in the books, I didn't really start thinking of her as a relevant character at all in the first book, I don't think.
I often got her confused with somebody else that we meet. I don't remember if it's in the end of book one or the beginning of book two, and it's not until much later that I start to realize, oh, wait, she's not one of them. So, because a lot of kids come to stay at Winterfell that we don't see on the series, because they've got too many characters as it is. They don't need to introduce more. In the book, Bran's not so alone. You know, there's a bunch of Freys there. There's some more kids there that, again, I don't want to say who they are in case.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I'd forgotten all about them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like talking about poor Rickon, you know, he doesn't get any screen time. So if they showed lots of other characters, nobody would get any time.
Yeah.
The part where Ari meets the other kids going up to the wall. I just wanted to peek under that hood of the three fellows in the cage. I wanted to peek under there and see if that is who I think it might be. And I know who the character is, but I don't. There's a theory out there that somebody's not dead and just changed his face. And with the series, I was thinking, well, if that's the case, will they use the same actor?
No,
so I don't know. So I just wanted to peek under that hood.
So spoilers, no. But the person who was hooded in the back of the jail cart might just turn out to be someone awesome.
Yes, and he's scary. Regardless, I loved how Hot Pie looked. That's the name of the fat boy. And Lami Green Hands actually had green hands. If you looked, it was very subtle. So I was kind of excited by that. And I like the chemistry between Ari and the bull.
On the one hand, this is a minor nitpick, but, you know, hey, Gendry, you could have stepped in to stop Hot Pie from bullying her before she had to pull out the sword and threaten his life. All of a sudden, he's got her back, like, after she has already solved the problem.
Yeah.
where he's just we see him, he's just standing there in the background. I'm glad that they didn't do that, because her opportunity to sort of call this kid on his bluster, just say, "I don't think you've actually killed anyone. I think you're full of crap. Well, guess what? I actually have." So
and I like so killing bad boys.
Yeah. I think maybe it speaks to like living in the ghetto and you always got this kind of stuff going on, and he doesn't get involved until the kid bumps into him.
I also think he was kind of sizing Ari up, trying to see, is this somebody worth
gonna happen?
Defending?
Yeah, because they're surrounded by a bunch of scumbags.
Yeah. And if you notice, the bull said, sorry, I always call him the bull. It's his name is Gendry, the blacksmith. He said that his master got tired of him, but we all know his master was not tired of him. So someone saved him. That's just all I'm going to say.
Well, why don't you say more?
Because that was my thought. It's like, okay, so you have to live the rest of your life out on the wall just because somebody gets sick of you. And then I thought, oh, well, clearly it must be the Lannisters trying to get rid of him because he's a bastard and all that.
Is this a spoiler for the later books? I thought it was like just... Okay, I'm sorry.
I mean, when do we find this stuff out? This isn't anything that's happened.
We never find it out.
Yeah.
We never find out who does this.
So I had thought what it was that part of the whole reason that Yoren was hanging out there with Ned in the beginning was Ned had gotten to him to say, you need to get this bastard out of the city or else the Lannisters are going to kill him.
Mm. That is a popular theory.
That was my assumption. Sorry.
No, it's very popular theory, and I am probably about 80-90% sure that's what had happened, that somehow Ned got word to his master, or whoever has been paying his apprenticeship fees.
See, I guess that's just my pessimism, is that I always assumed that because he's not getting paid those fees anymore, he boots the kid.
Mm. Could be, but Ned wasn't paying those fees.
Somebody was, though.
Yeah.
It had been John Aaron, and who knows who else.
Yeah. So.
Well, Littlefinger was in charge of the finances, and so we can maybe understand why. I mean, he was the one that led Ned to the guy in the first place, right? And so maybe it was just sort of a matter of Littlefinger's like, whew, I can cross that list off the list. I don't have to pay that anymore.
Yeah.
But again, I think that anyone would have hired him at that point, and I don't think that his master would have been tired of him. I think, you know, somebody was like, Yoren, get this kid out of here.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, my opinion.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's not a spoiler because we never get confirmation on any of these things.
Cool.
Well, then we move on to Rob's camp, where they've gotten the news about Ned, and Catelyn walks into the forest and breaks down, and she hears Rob, and he's chopping down a tree with his sword. And I want to say that I just don't think that for some reason, after Rob says, we'll kill them all, and then Catelyn says, we'll get the girls back, and then we'll kill them all. That scene, I think she looks the youngest, most vibrant, most beautiful that she's looked in any scene up to this point. And all the other scenes, to me, she looks kind of, you know, haggard and worn down and aged. And in this scene, it's almost like they tightened up her skin. They got the lens filter on. They really just like, she just looked stunning in that scene. I thought just the full empowerment of Catelyn Tully Stark was right there on screen. So anybody have any other thoughts?
She looks better in the natural light.
Yeah.
I think instead of the darkness or the, you know, flame light.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that I just was very empathetic with her right there. You could definitely feel what she was feeling. I think that the actress did an outstanding job.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as the actor that plays Rob, I'm suddenly blanking on his name. Both actors in this scene did such a fantastic job that you really felt their pain. And Catelyn was such a mother in the sense that, you know, Rob is just angry and he wants to kill everyone, which... I mean, as a reader, I wanted to kill everyone too. But Catelyn is like, you know, she says, no, we'll get your sisters. Then we will kill them all. Because she has just as much rage, but she's such a mother that all she can think about is her girls right now, because Now there's nobody there to protect them.
Yeah.
And anything the Lannisters want to do, I mean, talk about your hostages.
I agree with everything you said.
Chooch?
Good scene.
You ruined your sword.
And then we go to King's Landing in the throne room, and we see that that poor little musician singing his little song, making fun of the Lannisters.
And he gets to choose his fingers or his tongue.
Yikes.
Not a fun choice, and it looked like he made a really painful choice from the background that we saw of him.
What would you all choose?
His hands.
What would I choose? I would probably choose to keep my tongue, because you use it for talking, you use it for eating. How would I communicate with my kids? Is it all fingers or just one hand?
Well, I think the assumption was that it would be all your fingers.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be tough, but I think I would keep my tongue because, yeah, if you get an infection at that site, and then you're pretty much toast. You can keep amputating up your arm, but you can't, like, amputate your throat out, you know? And I don't care how hot that blade was. That sucker was bleeding. It was not cauterized.
Does have a point. The tongue is an organ, and it is very dangerous. I would assume I would keep my fingers simply because I'm an artist. And even though I like talking and I love eating, I just can't imagine not being able to paint. But I don't know. Maybe I could tape some paintbrushes to my stumps and relearn. I don't know.
There you go.
I know. Yeah, I'd keep my fingers. I mean, Mick Jagger lost part of his tongue. He's doing fine.
And there's that too. I
think about his tongue. I really don't. Does anybody have anything to add to the throne room scene?
No, except just yikes.
Joffrey's a ponce.
So then Joffrey takes Sansa to the battlement and makes her look at her father's head. And I think that was kind of where we missed out, not if you didn't read the book. Because in the book, you get the whole, like, what's going through her head, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm a Stark. I'm tough. I can do this. And she just stares at it, and it's like she makes it so she doesn't. Didn't she visualize that there was nothing there or something like that to make it so she could look at it without seeing her father? And then Joffrey's expecting this really horrified, shocked expression, and she's just like, how long do I have to look? You know, she was so cool about it. And so the book, I think, gave more depth than what she was going through, which I think was a shame, because to me, that was the first time that she ever really did anything of note. You know what I mean? She was just her one great shining moment, in my opinion. And it was, you got a taste of it, but you didn't get the full blow of it, I think.
I've seen that pretty much the whole time she's been in King's Landing, she's been a constant whine.
Yeah.
That's all she does is whine.
Yeah.
And that was one of the first times that she visually steeled herself and looked up and blanked out and said, how long do I have to look?
Yeah.
And she wasn't whining. She, you know?
Yeah.
So I think she did a great job of showing that transformation.
Yeah.
See, I agree. I felt like the actress did such a great job that it really, I mean, obviously there are details that we don't know, but I thought that she conveyed all of those emotions just fine without us needing to know the exact thoughts.
This is Sansa's first rebellion. Is Joffrey wants to see her freak out, and she refuses, and I love that. It's a little different than the way that I pictured it in the books. And also, this one, she starts to go to push him over, and she has to get stopped, whereas in the books, she's just thinking about it. She's thinking, because she's standing next to him, and she's thinking, I could just push him over. I can just do this. And I loved this scene. I loved everything about it. I think that the way that it was in the book would not have translated to the screen properly. So the way that they did this was excellent. And then we finally get some good Sansa and Hound interaction. I just loved it. And one thing that I noticed is, did you notice his armor?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only noticed that the second viewing, but yeah, he's in the Kingsguard armor now.
Yeah.
Yes. We did not see him get appointed to the Kingsguard He never took his vows. He's still not a sir because he refuses to be one, but he is now a member of the Kingsguard and the first one ever not to be a knight.
Yeah, it took the third viewing for me to notice, but yeah, I finally caught up to it.
And my lady mother says I should never, a king should never hit his queen. So, Sir Marin, or not Marin, what's his name?
Whatever. Marin.
It was Marin. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, Sir Marin. He clocks her twice with armor on. Like, you heard the metal against bone. Mm. That is going to leave such a mark and can be painful. Mm-hmm. She'll wear it as a badge of honor. Any other thoughts about the beatings, the hound stepping in and saving her from killing Joffrey?
I just remembered you commenting on missing out on those scenes. So when I saw it, I was like, Nutty's going to be so happy we finally have one. And I wonder if we had any before this. I don't remember. I'd have to go back and look. But it was certainly the ideal time for one to take place. You know, it was a moment of kindness when... It's inexplicable mostly, but it was something that she really needed when she's, you know, literally mixed in with the lions and her loved ones are on pikes in front of her. So,
and I feel like it conveyed everything that all those scenes that they've been cutting out, it conveyed that. One of the things that I was upset about missing out on these scenes is how tender and nice that the Hound is to Sansa, because he never sugarcoats anything, and he's always told her the truth.
Yeah.
Whereas everyone else let her live her pretty little lie. This is, again, something that HBO has done where in my head, I said, you're doing it wrong. There's no way you're going to be able to show this in the future. And then they did. So I'm happily wrong here.
The only thing that I have left to say on that scene is that I again wish that they had made him, and I don't know that I've said this before, but I do wish that they had made him more deformed, scary looking, because he's got the scarred side of his face, but he's always got hair hanging in front of it. And in the book, you know, you get a very disgusting depiction of what he looks like. I guess I understand why they did that, but I think it would have made his tender moments with Sansa more tender, and I think it would have made his scary moments, you know, even more disgusting and scary and stuff. So
I pictured his burns like the burns Mel Gibson had in that one movie. I can't remember the name of it, but he
Man Without a Face.
That's it. There you go, Man Without a Face.
And see, I was thinking that they made him look more like Man Without a Face than the way I pictured him in the book. But anyways, we're back at Rob's camp, and Great John makes a speech. Even their gods are wrong, PG says. The king of the north, Theon, makes his declaration, which was not in the book. That's one of his notes. But basically what we have is where Great John is saying he doesn't want to follow Baratheon, whether it's Stannis, Renly, or Joffrey. He knelt before the dragons, and he only has one king now, and that's Robb, the king of the north. Chooch, what are your thoughts on that scene?
The king of the north. I did like the Theon's, them are your brother, now and always, and that's some powerful stuff.
Yeah.
I did scream something at Theon when he said that.
So there was some reactions. Yes, it was very surprising since it wasn't in book one.
But I like it because I think it conveys the trust that Robb has for Theon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you see that these two men, they've grown up together. I mean, I think Theon was, 10 years old? He was Bran's age when he came to Winterfell. So, of course, they're best friends. They grew up together. You know, he should feel that way. He should be swept up in that. And if he wasn't, we'd be concerned. I did notice that Robb seemed surprised, whereas in the books, he knew this was coming.
I thought the scene is probably actually maybe my favorite of the episode. It just gave me goosebumps. It was just sort of, you know, there are many scenes that while I really like them sort of feel like, yep, that's the scene. But, you know, it's only a select handful of scenes from the show that sort of feel almost more powerful for me than the equivalent scene in the book. And this was one of them where just somehow, you know, this part of the book kind of just rolled past, and I was almost, I think, maybe just thinking, I'm not sure that's a good idea. But in this one, I sort of, I felt the emotion a bit stronger in the sense of them just feeling like, you know, here we're going to argue about whether to try to rally behind Renly or Stannis. We don't like either of those guys. What are we even doing here? Let's just be our own people. Let's just forget all them. Yeah. And I like that.
Hear, hear.
And in the first viewing, I saw it as not as surprise, but more as pride. But in the second viewing, I did see it more as surprise. Yeah. It was kind of weird.
Yeah. When I read the books, I got swept up. I was like, the first time I ever read it, I was like, of course, what a great idea. And then the second time I read the book and every other time I was chanting King of the North. So getting swept up in this was very easy for me.
This was the one scene that I saw, and it was a minor difference. It wasn't a big deal to me. But in the book, they actually had made it to River Run. And this scene took place in the Tully Castle. I can't remember if it was in the throne room or exactly what it was. But by this point, we had met Brendan Tully, and we had met Hoster Tully, Kat's other brother and her father.
Well, that's right, because she visited him in his sickbed.
Yes.
And
he asked for Lysa.
Sorry.
No, he doesn't die.
Sorry.
But he is very, very sick and on the edge of death. So that's not a big spoiler that an old man in his deathbed is going to die. So don't worry about it. it's not a spoiler.
Get mixed up, especially the beginning of the one and the end of another.
Totally understand. But yeah, that was the only difference that I saw over the last few chapters of the book was that they were in the dark, you know, at the camp rather than in the Tully camp, and we didn't have that introduction. But you know what? There was a lot that happened in this episode, so it's okay that they didn't introduce a bunch of new faces and a whole new location.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Next scene we have is Catelyn, who goes for a late night visit to see Jaime, and he makes a few sexual jokes. They discuss religion, and he confesses that he pushed him out the window.
Yeah.
Which, yay her for not bashing his skull in.
Yeah.
I loved his line where she's like, why did you push him out the window? Because I thought the fall would kill him.
Yeah. I was hoping, yeah. You know, it's interesting, though, because it sets up something that, you know, that develops further. But, you know, for all of this, you know, this true love, we were meant to be together, that Cersei lays on Ned. You know, here's Jaime kidnapped and decides to just kind of totally come clean about pushing Bran out the window, but he decides to refrain from saying why, because he doesn't want to implicate Cersei, whereas Cersei has already found someone new.
Yeah. A cousin.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. This scene with Kat and Jaime, that's not from book one, is it?
I don't think so.
I don't remember.
There's just a couple of things that are not from book one.
Do you remember the scene, Chooch?
I don't remember now.
He doesn't remember the scene.
Okay. So I just mental tally of all the different things, because Cersei finding another is also not from book one.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, which is the very next scene. He's up over to her bed and see Lancel.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now the listeners know why we made such a big deal out of Lancel.
Oh,
he looks all of 8 years old.
Well, and the and the funny thing is too that it's just kind of like he keeps saying stuff. It's like, oh, you know, it's like I can't believe we're at war. Is it like the other war when you were young?
I know.
And she's just like, stop talking.
I know.
Shut up. It makes it a lot harder to pretend you're Jamie if you talk.
For the listeners who haven't read, that's Cersei's whole idea. Is it okay if she sleeps with Lancel? Because he's just Jaime, only younger. Ew.
I don't know if it's just us prepping to move the house. We have our normal TVs in storage, so we're watching this on a much smaller TV. When that scene first started, and I just saw this skinny body on a bed, I thought the first time I saw it, I thought it was...
No. Joffrey?
No, not Joffrey.
I think I threw up in my mouth.
The Knight of Flowers.
Loras.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I can
see just saw this skinny blonde body. I thought it was Loras. Oh, are we going to go visit Renly and Loras? And I realize, oh, wait, no, that's that's Cersei. That's Lancelot.
Yeah, even though we were saying we thought Loras was a little too lean, let's say.
Oh, yeah.
He's still bigger than Lancelot.
Absolutely. Once they zoomed in closer, I was like, oh, okay. So I'm blaming it on the TV.
I must admit to feeling awkward seeing Lancel naked. I know we didn't see anything, but... Well, we saw his tush, but it was just like, I felt a little awkward. I was like, okay, that's creepy.
See, the cousin thing didn't even bother me at that point because, you know, at that point, this is partly from, you know, later books too, but just I start to like Jaime.
Yeah.
I still don't really like Cersei. But Lancel, he's just such a tool.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh. Really? Yeah. I don't even care that he's your cousin, really. But still, really? Him? Ugh.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to say a line from later, and I won't. Remind me of this for the spoilers episode. That we must talk about Cersei's exploits. Okay.
Yeah.
But yes. No, Lancel is just... And he's only, like, what, 2 years older than Joffrey? I mean, come on.
Yeah, something like that.
Rhodey, she could be his mother.
As he reminded her, basically.
Oh. Yeah.
And then we're back at the Lannister. Ooh, no, this is our first time at the Lannister camp in this episode where we have Tyrion enter, and he makes more sense than the rest. And I thought it was pretty cool when... he kicks everybody out and makes Tyrion stay, and Tyrion reaches for the wine and he stops him, and then he pours it. And the look of like complete suspicion on Tyrion's face, like, what have you? I
know. Yeah.
It's like, what is up? So talk about the scene.
I loved how it started with the, they have my son. People are talking. They have my son. People are talking. They have my son. It was just awesome because you can see that Tywin, he loves Jaime. He went after Tyrion out of duty and, you know, this is an insult to my honor. But Jaime, no. He loves him. And you actually see some fatherly.
Like, Jaime's the best one.
Yes. He's not a bitch. He knows how to fight, and he's not a dwarf. What the hell?
Yeah, and you saw this moment of, I think it was probably besides pouring the wine, I think Tyrion is probably more surprised by him saying, because you're my son, when he's asked why he wants him to be the hand. That was like, I don't remember him ever calling him his son before. Wasn't that like the whole point of that?
Yeah, that was the heart melting moment.
Yeah.
Well, but it's such a great poisonous thing, though. What we see, and Peter Dinklage just conveys this so perfectly, is when he says, you know, it's because you're my son, but there's this dual emotions warring, which is, one is like, you think Jamie's as good as dead and I'm all you've got left, isn't it? But then also this sort of desperate need to want him to really mean it. And that's just what's sort of so interesting about Tywin as a character is he has these children who all have these incredibly strong personalities in their own right, and yet he just reduces them to nothing by his mere presence. And it's kind of amazing. And so, but I think it's conveyed so well, they sell it. It, you know, it doesn't feel strange because he has a force of personality, and the actors are all good. And so it's just this whole bit of, you know, because you're my son, and we sort of want to go, oh, that's nice, but wait a minute.
I was going to say that I think it could even be argued that some of the strongest people, the strongest, fierce, ferocious people probably have that in common, is that they just crave that parental respect, that I'm going to go out there and earn their respect because they didn't just give it to me like all the other kids got. All the other kids got love, and the other kids got, you know, respect, and they got all of this. And my daddy didn't give it to me, and I didn't have a mommy, so they had to go out there and get things or attain things that he would respect. So I think that that probably is not terribly uncommon in literature, but it's still something that Tywin, he wields it like a really nasty, sharp sword too, you know, and he just really cuts them down. And I think another thing that was playing on Tyrion's face was, I want to tell you to fuck off, but I really love my brother. So what, how am I going to help get him back? Well, if this frees him up to go get my brother back, then this is what I'll do. But then also some of that love me daddy stuff too.
And I think that Tyrion is happiest that his father recognizes his cleverness and his cunning, because really that's what Tyrion prides himself on, is his wits. As he says, you know, in an earlier episode, my brother can fight. I have to find strength elsewhere. And he has talked about how his family matters so much to him. Now, he really loves Jaime. Does he love Cersei? I don't know. Probably not after the turtle stew. And, you know, he always calls her his sweet sister very sarcastically. But I think he really does care about the children, especially Tommen and Mycella. Yes, he smacks Joffrey around, but I think he kind of wants Joffrey to be better than he actually is. I think that Tyrion actually really does care about the Lannister name, and he really does care about his family. So he sees his sister is letting Joffrey kill their only hostage. So yes, let me go be Hand and try and fix this nonsense.
Because I think there is that aspect of it too, is he just recognizes the sense in what Tywin is proposing, of saying, yeah, we need someone there because Cersei's clearly not able to rein in Joffrey sufficiently to prevent this sort of disaster. And so someone needs to be there. And, you know, he's been saying all along that his front line is not where he belongs. So I think all of that is in that scene, and it was really well done, I thought.
Yeah. Then we go to Vaes Dothrak with Dany and Jorah, where she asks, where is my son? And finds out that he is dead, that he was scaled like a lizard and had grave worms and all kinds of gross stuff. And then Mary explains that, you know, you knew that only death can pay for life. You knew what the cost was. And she's pretty heartbroken.
Aren't you glad they didn't show us the stillborn son?
I would have checked out of the series at that point. I'm out.
The costume was supposed to be a horse, I thought.
Well, and I mean, I thought that even in the book was kind of an interesting fake out, where, you know, the horse is obviously like right there, but, you know, they sort of imply, you know, or it's certainly what Mary's saying to Daenerys is saying, it's like, yeah, I had the horse come in so you could sort of pretend that you thought that's what was really going on, but really you knew. And then I think the story, the book kind of implies that that is probably true.
Well, there's that. And there's also, I kind of always thought, like, after reading it, that, because I remember reading it and going, wait, a horse is going to bring Khal Drogo back, really? But I remember after everything is said and done, thinking, no, but the horse. And then I thought, wait, her child was supposed to be the stallion that mounts the world. So, like, maybe the horse was needed as a symbol sacrifice for the child. It wasn't just killed in vain.
Oh, and then there's all that blood for that blood magic, too, so.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, too, that in the book, when she was negotiating with Mary, the instant Mary mentioned there is a spell, and I was just going, oh, no. There has never, ever, ever in any sort of fiction I'm aware of been a spell that was to bring someone back to life that resulted in good things.
No. Yeah.
Except, you know, the Bible, maybe. That's a good one, but that's maybe. Like the only one.
That only happened one time.
Yeah. Just the one.
The exception that proves the rule.
And nobody needed to sacrifice a horse for that one.
Exactly. No. There were no sacrifices. And I like whatchamacallit, in the last episode she says, are you sure? Some things are worse, you know, sometimes death is better than life or something like that. Or
death is cleaner, I think.
Yeah,
is what
death
she said.
Is cleaner or something. And when she said that in the books, I was thinking, because I have worked in the healthcare industry in my past. I have seen a lot of, you know, sometimes death is better. And that's all that was running through my head. And I was screaming, no, Danny, no, don't make this deal. No, just let him die. Mm. Yeah. Let him give him a sword and let him go fight somebody and let him die properly. That's what I was screaming at my book. Because to me, the Dothraki are Klingons. So.
What were you going to say, Chooch?
Oh, the obligatory, sometimes dead is better.
That this whole element of the story, I think, is really interesting just in terms of, you know, Miriam Azdura plays such an interesting role. And now, of course, people who hadn't, you know, read the books are knowing why we were talking about Miri earlier on when it seemed like she was a relatively unimportant character. But then all of a sudden, you know, we were talking, it's like, oh, they said, look, it was Miri. I got goosebumps. Because, yeah, she's, you know, turns out to be kind of creepy and scary. But I think, you know, it really marks a huge turning point for Daenerys, not only just obviously in her, you know, external circumstances, but also just in her mindset, because she had been sort of attracted to the power of Drogo and the whole idea of this, you know, this Khalasar. But I think she thought that she could maybe soften some of the elements of it that she didn't like, but without otherwise essentially changing the whole thing. You know, so she could stop them from raping, but the rest of it's okay. But I think it is sort of hearing Miriam Azdura's explanation that makes her start thinking, you know, I've been going about this the wrong way. I need to be doing this the way I feel is right from the start, not just trying to, trim the corners that I don't like of something else.
Right.
But then of course, right at the same time, it's like, thank you, Miriam Azdura, for teaching me this important life lesson. I still need to burn you.
I think Daenerys goes from being a passenger to a driver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the classic, you know, men, woman difference. The female, oh, I'll get together with them and then I'll change them to exactly how I want.
If you didn't like them the way that you found them, what makes you think they're going to change?
I just love that he had to throw in the male-female thing. As if assuming that it's the women trying to change the men.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was in this case, technically.
So then we go to the wall and we have John sneaking out and Samwell Tarly, brave Sam, and we have a ghost sighting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Am I the only one that in the book when this happened and in the series, I'm like picturing Sam as Neville Longbottom?
Oh, totally.
You're going to get us in trouble.
Absolutely. Well, but then he stands up to his friends.
Yeah.
He literally lets the horse knock him over. He doesn't move.
Yep.
That was pretty tough.
Go, Sam.
Yeah, I didn't picture Neville there because I had read this before I read Harry Potter, so I never made that connection until you said it just now. So very cool because Neville's my favorite Harry Potter character.
I could never express that with any of the people that I know that have read the books, save for one, but I never did because none of them have read Harry Potter. So it was like, oh. I was like, yes,
they're lost.
Yeah, as well, you know.
Any other comments here? We got to see Ghost.
Yay, Ghost.
White streak of fur going in the dark. Nope. And then we are in Tyrion's tent again with Shay, and she's having a hissy fit and asking if Tywin knew her by name, which I think is an interesting question, but she is a whore, so.
Yeah. I feel like there's some additional depth there that we can't go into completely in this episode.
Oh, I just assumed she was baiting him to say he doesn't know who I am, so well, I can go with you anyways.
There sure. is that too. Sure. I mean, that's certainly true also. I mean, because I think she's such an interesting character in that she never volunteers anything, but yeah. You know, clearly what we can glean from her in this case is that she doesn't want to be left behind.
Yeah.
And so she manipulates Tyrion into basically framing it as a, come on, you don't want to just do what your father says, do you? Wouldn't you like to kind of stick it to him a little bit?
Which is interesting timing, considering he just said for the first time, you're my son. Oh, yeah? Fuck you, Dad. I'm taking my whore to court.
He's always been a cunt.
I know. Yeah. My son. You cunt.
But, you know, as soon as he said, my son, and then he said, don't take that whore to court, Tywin has always been very down on Tyrion about the whores, and it all stems back to Tyrion's ex-wife, Tysha. And so every time his father says something about one of Tyrion's whores, it just brings that old wound right back up. You know, it's like, my son, the worst thing that ever happened to you. Ha ha ha. So, yeah, Tywin's evil. Worst father ever.
Did anybody have any other comments about Shay and Tyrion?
No, except that I just feel like they're doing a good job of conveying how I felt about Shay, which is that she's kind of hard to get a beat on.
Agreed.
She seems more manipulative in the series to me. I don't think that she had as many wiles when I read it, but I don't know. In the later books, you kind of realize, wait a minute, she has more wiles than she pretends she has.
Hmm.
And then with PG's list, we have the chase for John, where they circle him, which I guess we kind of were talking the two scenes together, with Sam, Pip, uh-huh. and Bren, and they actually repeat the oath. And PG's comment is, for the first time, you actually feel what it means to be part of the Watch.
Yes.
So I agree with that. It was pretty powerful to have these guys that were so green and so new to the Watch start reciting the words to try and save John and keep him honorable, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
And it worked.
I liked that scene, but skipping ahead a little bit better, I think the scene with Mormont later had more impact on me than yes. this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That scene also had the comic relief of, you know, Branch, John Ducks, Branch, Samwell, bam, yeah. right into it. He's not a ranger.
I didn't dislike the scene, though. I mean, I thought it worked, and it was just sort of, it also just solidifies to all of us, like, including, you know, new viewers, that, that okay, these are, like, this is John's crew now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we are back in Baes Dothrak with Dany, who, after trying to revive Khal Drogo, shall we say, she finally realizes that he never will be the same and smothers him with a pillow, which mm-hmm. is a kindness, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And another scene that they skipped from the book, or rather that they didn't show from the book, that I was happy about. Because in the book, she tries to mount him and it doesn't work. And that's when she realizes he's not really there.
Yeah, I think the book said, you know, she couldn't take him inside her because she was still sore from the childbirth, but that she tried the other things that she had been taught and that he didn't rise. She worked it trying to see if he was in there, and there was no response. So
poor Khal Drogo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Shall be missed. It is known.
It is known.
Then we get to what is, I think, hands down, my favorite created scene that was not in the book, which was with Maester Pycelle and Ross.
Yeah.
That was such a fantastic scene.
Magical pussy exposition.
Yeah. And she's bored. I just love how she's like, the thing about kings, you were saying, oh, it doesn't matter. I love Roz's powers of exposition, but I love that we see the two sides of Maester Pycelle here, because this is something you don't find out about Maester Pycelle until much, much later. Yeah, a big old faker and a player.
It was pretty brilliantly done. I just loved it.
And for those who haven't read the books, yeah, maesters are not supposed to have sex. Just saying.
And he's not supposed to be spry.
Yes, and he does both a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is, too, that you know, that there's some proactive counterintelligence going on with that whole thing of, not only does he play the old feeble guy just in public to begin with, but he's got one of Littlefinger's horse there, right? Mm-hmm. And so he's basically proactively giving Littlefinger something he thinks he can use against him, at the same time that he's having Roz feed Baelish false information.
Yeah. Brilliant. It was one of those, I think I may have cheered at the end of that scene. It was
Funny. The slump at the door just before he heads out was just so perfect.
Slump with the grunt. It was like, as he settles back into his hunchback.
I will say, though, I was a little horrified to see a shadow of Pycelle's wing wang. I was like, God, I can see it.
Was a little see-through, yeah.
Just as Sansa chose not to see her father's head on a pike, I chose not to look closely at what was going on with his see-through gown.
Oh, it was great. Great scene.
Yeah. And then we have the very strange and hilarious, I thought it was hilarious, scene with Varys and Littlefinger, where they're talking about Varys's potential gash. Oh, yeah.
Does it keep you up late at night thinking about my gash?
I love that scene.
The back and forth that Varys did with that, I thought was brilliant. But and it was funny, and it was like definitely setting up a chessboard, so to speak, between the two. But mm-hmm. I also kind of wonder why they spent so much time on it in the finale when there were so many other things that felt not cut short, but like I would have enjoyed a few more seconds here and a few more seconds there. I don't really think that they accomplished much with that scene. And as far as, you know, it was a scene that was not in the book, obviously, because there's nobody else in there that had that point of view told. But
yeah, and in previous scenes, they had already had their banner back and forth. And, yeah.
What do you guys think?
I would agree that it's not strictly necessary, but I would watch a whole episode of those two guys.
The Odd Couple.
The Adventures of Piter and Varys.
Yeah, they need to do a spinoff. Yeah, exactly. Buddy cop spinoff.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. I also think that they're trying to lay groundwork for future seasons, because there is a lot about I keep calling him Piter because they changed it to Peter for the series. Peter's agenda and Varys' agenda, while they're both sneaky people, they're going towards different directions. And we never quite know, or at least in one, we never quite know until much in ever, actually. And one we find out much later. But I feel like we're getting hints of it here. You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In some of the special little featurettes that they're doing on HBO Go, they talk a little bit about those two guys in the sense that Baelish has kind of got what's known as realpolitik, which is basically just, you know, there's no morals involved. It's just a matter of whatever's going to get you the best outcome, do it.
Right.
So there it's all pragmatic and all, you know, selfish in the context of just saying, you know, listen, don't get hung up on whether something is the right thing or the wrong thing, because, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, the whole it's the antithesis of Ned's philosophy. It's just a matter of, you know, it's like, yes, Ned, you are right. Joffrey does not have the heir to the throne. He's going to be a puppet to Cersei. How about we have him be our puppet instead?
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, he has no qualms about whether the morality of the situation. It's just purely a matter of, hey, this would be the best outcome for me. And then Varys, on the other hand, at least apparently, He is primarily concerned not with his own personal power, but actually trying to have stability in the realm, which is not an entirely unselfish motivation either, because peace is good for him, just like it's good for the realm.
Now that you mention that, I kind of wonder if the fact that Varys is a eunuch, his motives are a little cleaner. Because everyone else is motivated by their children and the future. You know, where will my status be? You know, Littlefinger started out this tiny little lord of like nothing, and he's worked to build himself up to something greater. And while he doesn't have children now, there's still that future and putting the Baelish name to be a much higher name than what it started out with. So I wonder if, because Varys is a eunuch and he's not going to have children, if that changes things, much like the Kingsguard is not supposed to take wives or women, and the Night's Watch is not supposed to take wives or women. The Septas and the Septons and the Maesters are not supposed to take wives or husbands or anything, because it's supposed to keep them pure and on their task. So I kind of wonder, I don't know, it kind of makes me think of Varys in a higher light than I used to.
Any other comments on the scene?
Nope. I did forgot on my notes. After that scene is when we have Arya with the have the altercation with the kids.
Gotcha.
Which we discussed.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So back to the wall.
I was going to say, I was pretty sure it wasn't so early in the episode, but yeah. Back to the wall.
And the Night's Watch will ride. Mm-hmm. He has the scene and that bolstering, empowering scene with Mormont, and they did another great transition where it went from them talking to the Night's Watch will ride, and then everybody arming themselves and prepping to leave, and that's awesome. Pretty cool.
Yeah, in their conversation, Christiana was saying how what an impactful conversation that was, what a great scene that was.
Yep.
Then just the great line, or a couple lines, where, you know, honor brought you back. And so my friends brought me back. Well, I didn't say it was your honor.
Yeah.
I'm just glad you weren't out whoring in Molestown.
Yeah.
Chooch, since you've only read the first book, did they actually ride out in the first book?
I don't think so.
Okay, I thought that was another thing from the second book.
I loved the practicality of, if we beheaded everyone who ran away for the night, we would have nobody left.
Ghosts guarding the wall.
But I tell you, what really had the biggest impact for me was this, you know, this whole thing of, it's like, the White Walkers might be back. We have dead people rising up to fight us. Do you really think that's less important than the people who sits on the Iron Throne? And put in that context, John has to just go, whoa, yeah. I mean, I didn't really even think about it that way. And I mean, that's one of the, you know, this is not really a spoiler of the whole series, but just one of the whole elements of the whole thing is that we sort of feel that way. We start getting this sense that there are much bigger threats than the stuff that they're squabbling about here in the kingdom, and their squabbling is leaving them completely unprepared.
Yeah.
As Osha said, you're marching the wrong way.
Then we go back to Vaes Dothrak, where Dany has Jorah tie the witch to the pyre, and he does that speech about, you know, I don't want to watch you take your life, and she smooches him and says, is that what you think I'm going to do? And she ends up, well, she gives her big speech and lets the slaves go free.
My one nitpick was Drogo gives his big speech, and it's in Dothraki, because he's talking to Dothraki. She speaks English.
Oh.
What's up with that?
Yeah, I hadn't noticed that.
We know she's fluent.
Probably because most of them were not Dothraki.
As far as I know, the only one who would have been able to, the only two would have been able to send it would be Joris and the witch.
Well, because they said that the Dothraki rode out, and what was left was the slaves, the lamb people.
Yeah, they're going to be bilingual.
Yeah, they're probably common tongue.
I don't think so.
It would be strange for them to speak the Westeros tongue and not
Dothraki tongue. But she could be speaking common tongue, like they do in Pentos.
A wizard did it.
Yes, a wizard did it.
And it's ultimately not important.
If you stand close enough to the TARDIS, if you're within there, then it does
She put a babel fish in her ear.
Just bothers me how she's so choosy on what language to use.
Yeah.
It's a good nitpick, though. That is a good nitpick. I agree. And my nitpick is that, okay, we've been constantly saying how this horde is like 10 people. And now that the horde has left, it seems like there's more people.
Yeah. Slaves are cheaper than Dothraki.
I think that's just to say that they were way far in the back.
Yeah.
They don't have to show so many horses.
Yeah, exactly. And then we actually see her walk into the pyre after she does, in fact, make Miri Mazdoor scream when Miri says, "You won't hear me scream." Mm-hmm. And she rightfully said, "Oh, yes, I will."
Yeah. That was a great badass line of just like, "Oh, I will." but it's not your screams I need.
Yes.
Boom, boom, boom.
I'm sure we were all like so happy to see Mary Mazdur burn. I was.
I'm not big on watching people burn, but I wasn't sad to see her leave the show. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that I had a little moment when they pulled back and they did an aerial shot of the fire with the two rings of fire and the weird line. And I was like, oh, I wonder if that's that weird formation that the dead bodies were in at the beginning of episode one in the north. I went back and I looked and it's not.
Oh,
but I was so proud of myself for having that thought and then going and looking, and then I was pissed because it didn't matter.
Yeah. And you got Christiana and I all excited too.
Oh, that's how I felt. Thanks, I wonder if man. That's what it was. No, that I mean they are both round, but the first one was just the first one looked more like one of those male female things, you know, the line coming down. It was like a single circle with a line coming down, and this one was like two circles with a little line where like a Q would have a line.
I assumed it was done that way so that there'd be more heat in the center because you needed it to be hotter than a normal fire.
Well, it's definitely more true than what my theory was. So, and then the next morning, which I think it's crazy that they all just kind of fell asleep sitting where they were and nobody bothered to look or anything like that.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, Jorgen's strolling up. Like, where the hell was he?
Yeah, where was he? This woman that he loves and has bound himself to.
He said he wouldn't watch her burn. He probably left.
I think, I don't know. I think he went and had some fun with a slave or something because he just came strolling in like he had come in from some other place.
No, he wouldn't mess around on Danny. He went over and he would, you know, sulked in the desert for a little while and pushed rocks around with his shoe.
Oh, shook.
I have this picture of Jorah toe scuffing right now, and it's the cutest little thing I've ever seen.
Aww.
By the way, Jorah in Dothraki clothes. So much hotter than Jorah in armor. Just saying.
Oh, I think anything. I think you could that could be said about anybody. I don't think that Khal Drogo would have looked as hot in armor.
Okay, true. But I'm sure that Samwell Tarly looks better in armor than he would shirtless.
I don't know.
Just saying.
So the next morning we see her and she arises and her clothes are burned away and she has three baby dragons wrapped around her and they did a fantastic job with the dragons, as we mentioned earlier in the episode.
One is breastfeeding.
I was disappointed that wasn't more obvious as it was in the book. That it wasn't obvious that she was suckling one of the dragons. She more tactfully placed it over her punani instead of her breast because, you know, breasts are more allowable than the vajayjays. And the only thing that bugged me was, why does she have hair? She didn't have hair in the book. That was the, and I understand why, because she's just so pretty, and you want to have that finishing shot of her so you can use it to publicize all next season. It's not as pretty if her head's burned off, bald, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, they shortened her ponytail. Her ponytail was burned off, but nothing around her face was burned off. Like, at least put a little soot on it, you know?
The book has her as her beautiful hair all crisped away.
Yep.
So, that was a nitpick.
I knew they were going to leave her hair on, though.
Yeah, it's different than what's in the book, but at the same time, I don't think it's too big a stretch to say she has some magical ability to withstand fire, but her hair doesn't. I'm honestly glad they didn't, just because visually, if I have to watch her, I'd rather her have the hair.
The dragons looked awesome.
They did.
They were fantastic.
They were so cute.
I really wasn't expecting a whole lot with where they had cut corners in the episode, but I'm glad that they spent the money where they did.
Yeah.
And of course, that's where the book ends. And all I'm thinking is, I'm wondering, you know, how long it's going to take for those guys to grow up.
In direwolf time, we've seen that they are not very.
Yeah, it won't take any time at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm thinking like Dungeons and Dragons time, it could be like hundreds of years.
Well, they're more animals than mythical. I will say that. That's all I'll say.
Well, and with the whole suckling and all that.
They got breast milk. They're going to grow real fast. No, I'm kidding.
They got the Danny breasts.
And I do see a note here now mixed in with some other scenes that it didn't catch my attention earlier, where PG does mention the scene with Arya and Gendry, but he points out a continuity error where he says Needle appears and disappears at Arya's side.
Yes.
Gendry is seen, and it's pulled from an early chapter of Clash of Kings.
Yes.
Do we have any other comments about the episode itself before we move on to the survey?
No.
I can't wait for next season. Why do we have to wait a whole year?
I'm just glad it's only a year, because a lot of HBO series have actually had 18-month breaks between seasons. Ugh.
Let's go to the survey.
Survey!
Now, I did the count of fire by every time we saw fire, which means torches, work fires, candles, blah, 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 blah. There were 12.
Wow.
There were 12 scenes. I mean, there was really only one fire that I thought was like really important. But mm-hmm. since we only specified, you know, how many scenes do you see fire? There were 12. And that's when I stopped counting and I didn't do a double count because, come on, nobody voted 12. And then for deaths, we only had two, Khal Drogo and Miri Mazdur. Mm-hmm. The baby didn't die on screen, so sadly does not count. So
it never lived.
It never lived. So that leaves us with two deaths and 12 fires. And Chooch's guess was 5 deaths and 2 fires. Mine was 3 deaths and 4 fires. Nutty's was 3 deaths and 2 fires. Christiana had 5 and 5. PG had 4 and 4. So we are lost.
Any listeners get it right? Mm-hmm.
Christiana was the closest, though. For the listener submissions, we have a winner.
Yay. Is it Pat?
Ben, no. He had actually told me that he didn't think it would be fair to win twice. So if he did enter, that he would not accept the prize. So
now we can call him Pat Stark.
Pat Stark.
The honorable thing.
But our winner is Ben Brussel, or Brussel. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. He voted 2-2. So he did not go over on fires and he did not go over on deaths. So congratulations. And his was the very first submission. As soon as I posted the survey, mm-hmm. within an hour, I saw that I had an email that he had submitted.
Wow.
So he was the very first person.
Congrats.
First and right.
Awesome.
And then we go to feedback, which we do have a few pieces of feedback. And I'm actually going to start with an email that PG wanted to make sure that I read. I listened to your episode regarding The Pointy End, and it was the first time I tuned in. I've read all the books and seen all the shows, so I have some background here. So I just wanted to make a quick comment. Your show is fantastic, and you guys are all clearly learned people and big fans of the series. That's great. What's not so great is your episode format. It seems as though the man leading the discussion, sorry, I forgot your name, paces your show by going point for point about things he doesn't like or that don't go precisely with the books. This is just silly. Fans of the series probably don't want to hear something negative about the show as every single conversation starter. The moderator seems to nitpick the hell out of the TV series without realizing the extraordinary complications involved in being faithful to those haphazard books on air. Case in point, you were that upset about the Snow/other/Mormont scene? In an episode with so many plot details, the fact that he threw the lantern on him instead of burning curtains actually pissed you off? And sometimes it seems as though you are really looking hard for things to bitch about, like the other pulling the sword out of himself. I assumed he pulled it out slightly because he was pinned to the wall and left it in as he advanced to emphasize how hard they are to kill. I thought that kind of subtlety on television was brilliant. And you sound a lot like Martin, like a Martin fanboy when you take issue with tiny things like that in such an epic story. Sorry for the long email, but this is a big fundamental flaw in the way your host analyzes the story. And I feel like he needs to take a chill pill and stop being such a Dolores Ed. Best, Max Mishore.
I have sometimes felt like he's nitpicking a little bit, but at the same time, I think it's important. It's good to have multiple points of view because, I mean, not everybody's going to agree from the listener perspective, too. And so I think if we were always just talking about the positive things and never mentioning anything that bothers us, the people who are listening who might have had some things bother them wouldn't feel like, you know, they're hearing their voice represented. But, you know, I don't know, maybe the balance is off. I don't know. I mean, I hadn't felt like it was, but.
Yeah, I've had the impression that we do cover both angles, that we do balance positive and negative. I could see maybe if that particular episode starting the discussion with negatives each time, it could. I mean, I tend to feel myself that that I'm a little more negative than positive, and I do more nitpicks. And I believe he wrote this was the first episode he'd listened to.
Right.
And it was the first episode, maybe the second one, where I had said, okay, here's a nitpick, but really, that's all we have because it's all done so well.
Yeah.
And if we didn't have these nitpicks, there wouldn't be anything to criticize.
Yeah. I mean, we could sit here and go, Squee, that was awesome. I loved this part. That was awesome. That was great. There was nothing wrong. It was perfect. Yeah,
that's all we're left with.
I know.
Is nitpicks.
Well, and I think just like you just said, that episode in particular, I think, had more of that than most of them have.
One thing I wanted to say was, this is a common criticism about fan podcasts about particular shows. I remember hearing the same argument on the Ninth Heroes cast over and over again. I remember hearing it on the other Heroes podcast. I remember hearing it. There's only been a few as the show is airing podcasts that I have actually listened to because I don't really watch a lot of live television. But and I've heard it on several Buffy podcasts as well. When you're doing show by show episode reactions and pretty much dissecting them the way that we do, it's kind of hard not to come up with the nitpicks. I do feel like we are very excited and happy about the show, but I can see how it can appear to a listener that we're just down on your favorite show. And we don't mean for that to happen. We just are all about discussing it. And like my co-hosts have said, if we just said, oh, this was awesome, this was awesome, this was awesome, you would get bored and change and stop listening. And, you know, you may not be listening now because you might have felt that we were too negative. But we really love the books, and that's why we nitpick it. And we're not just fanboying for Martin, because we'll argue, and if you listen to our spoiler episode, you may hear us argue over things that Martin has done in the books as well. That's what good geeks do. Our favorite thing to do is to argue and nitpick, because if we're not arguing and nitpicking over something, we don't love it. We don't care enough about it. And I still say that we were discussing the pointy end. That is still one of my favorite episodes. So, yeah. And I remember saying in the beginning of that I thought when we recorded that was one of my favorite episodes, and I had a few nitpicks, but I just loved it so much. So please don't get our nitpicks coming from something other than fan love.
Indeed.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly with everything that you guys have said, and I will just add that, to be honest, I was surprised that PG got that, because I feel like I've been more negative than PG, and maybe everybody feels that way to a certain extent, but I think that his excitement about all of the episodes, and I think I know for sure that we have all taken turns defending different nitpicks that others have had, and I think that he has gone to a lot of trouble to defend nitpicks. So I was surprised that he was called the negative one, to be quite honest with you. And I agree with everything else that you guys have said. I think that he may be leading off, like Juch said, with the negatives, because otherwise it's just squee, squee, awesome. And that's pretty boring. And forget the fact, no offense to Max, but forget the fact that Max would stop listening. I would stop doing it. I mean, let's be honest, we're not getting paid to do this. We're not getting anything out of this except for the enjoyment of sitting and talking and geeking out for what ends up being about 2 to 2.5 hours, sometimes almost 3, for what we consider to be a fantastic book series. For Chooch, it's a book because it's the only one he's read. And so far, a fantastic TV series. We are all loving it. That's why we're here. If we hated it, we wouldn't be putting this time into it. So I'm sorry, Max, but you know, this is what keeps it interesting for us, which is what keeps us wanting to do it. And feedback like yours, while we'll definitely consider it, having spent hours editing the episode, hours and hours and hours for each episode, I didn't come off with that. And so when PG showed me the email, I was really surprised. But I respect your opinion, And I'm not going to say that we're going to change the format of the show because it's the finale episode. So it's a little late for that. But even had we gotten it earlier, I'm not sure I would change it because I've enjoyed our discussions so far. And you know, if you feel like giving us another chance, then awesome. And if you're just listening to this one to see if we had the balls to play your email, then we did. And we're addressing it fairly. And I wish PG were here to speak for himself, but he's not. But I think that my co-hosts have spoken very well on the subject. And I think it's true if any of us had been said to be too negative, I think all of our arguments still play.
And I encourage you to listen to our earlier episodes and get a more well-rounded opinion of us. And if you want a podcast that is nothing but the positive points and has no nitpicks and no negativity, I highly recommend you going to the actual HBO podcast. I haven't listened to it because I generally don't listen to. I've learned in the past not to listen to the channel that is producing a show, their podcast, because they never say anything bad about it, and they never criticize, and
it's a commercial.
Yeah, it's just a big commercial, and I'm not happy with it. But I will say that I've been listening to the other podcasts about Game of Thrones. I've been listening to the other Beyond the Wall podcast, and I have been listening to a podcast of Ice and Fire. And if you think we're negative, you might want to take a listen to some other shows, because these are spoiler podcasts, just for our listeners that don't want spoilers. They're a lot of fun, but they are spoiler podcasts. And if you want to listen to them, they will go into the nitty and the gritty, and you know, they will definitely be negative. And I love them for that, but I kind of feel like they're a lot more negative than we are sometimes, and it's a lot of fun.
I think it proves that we're not Martin's fanboys because we're willing to point out nitpicks.
Exactly.
Every podcast I do for fun. And so the instant that it's not fun, I don't want to do it anymore.
Exactly.
So, I mean, at some point, if pleasing the audience means that it's not fun for me, I don't do the show anymore.
Yep.
I like that. And you know, I think one of the other things is he might think that we're negative because we kind of, when somebody brings up a nitpick, we do argue it back and forth.
Yeah. And Shoot, you have an email for us?
Yes. From Pat Stark.
From Patman. Pat.
Who's not technically a Stark.
Mm-mm.
Hey, thought I'd shoot these off in hopes you hadn't recorded yet. Comments in convenient bullet format. I thought it wrapped up the season very well. And like the entire season, was 90% faithful to the book. I like the scene between Jamie and Catelyn, especially because the actor is a really, really good Jamie. It took my breath away when he told Cat that he pushed Bran off the tower and then choked up when she asked him why.
Yeah.
I was wondering where the scene with Roz and Pycelle was going until Roz left and Pycelle was very spry and non-feeble. I found that an interesting window into Pycelle and his facade of being a frail, doddering old man.
Mm.
I'd pay to watch Varys and Littlefinger have their own show.
He stole your line, Christiana.
Yeah.
You're on to something.
Mm-hmm.
I was very happy to see Arya's traveling companions. Yorin is my hero.
Mm.
Clegane is my other hero. Thumbs up on doing his job and protecting the king while not being a big douchebag. So glad he could subtly assist Sansa.
Mm.
I was happy to see all three Mormonts in the episode, Ser Jorah, the Lord Commander, and the Lord Commander's sister. I'm sure that the wild-haired woman in armor with Robb's bannerman is the Lady of Bear Island.
Mm.
I didn't even notice that. Thank you, Pat.
Wow. We see three swords that have names in that episode. Note for future quiz. How many named swords? I found Miri Mazdura's speech to Dany very moving. If Dany is going to become a conqueror, she needs to understand the cost.
Mm.
Mm. It was cool to hear the recitation of the oath. As always, I like the scene between Tywin and Tyrion. Tyrion stays at his Lord Father's request. Tyrion reaches for the wine and Tywin intercepts, then pours the wine for Tyrion.
How many of us thought he was just going to take that wine away?
Mm-hmm.
I totally thought he was.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, I'm very happy with the series and the adaptation of one of my favorite book series and look forward to season two. If I had to choose my favorite quote from the episode, it would be, probably paraphrasing, "There are no men like me. There's only me. nearly every character in the book to a greater or lesser degree is pretty fascinating and has an interesting dynamic that motivates them. Seeing Jamie's dynamic start to unfold really makes me smile. Again, I'm glad that scene with Cat and Jamie was put in at the end of the season. And I'll be keeping my eye out for more commentary and for casting news. If the casting of season two is as good as season one, I'll be happy. Pat.
Yeah, and as far as casting news, just I saw on Twitter tonight that, and I don't remember the actress's name, but the actress that played Anne on the Showtime show, The Tudors, been cast. Go ahead, Nettie.
Sorry, just her name is Natalie Dormer.
And she's been cast as, how do you pronounce it?
Marjorie Tyrell. Yeah.
Loras's sister. What are you, is there more? That's off the website.
Oh, that's off the website?
Yeah.
It's a great podcast. I look forward to your podcast about Ned's haircut gone awry.
Oh, that's awesome. Ned. And on Twitter, Nobilis says, BTW podcast, Cyclopean biceps are bigger than Herculean biceps. So now we get our definition.
Well, you know, I added him back, but it's so much funnier thinking of a big eyeball bulging out of a bicep. And he didn't reply. I think it was beneath him.
I don't know. Eyeball bulging out of looking from a bicep. I'm afraid of like a Scott Sigler novel or something.
Right on. And then we had Pat restating the cyclopean bicep. Huge, massive, giant biceps, not PG's one-eyed biceps. That's the last time I described PG as 8 feet tall with arms like a son of a titan.
I had one complaint about Pat's email. Where's the criticism? Where's the nitpick? Oh, no. He listened to our other mail.
And then from someone, D-U-E-F, Duef, we have... Still eagerly waiting for the next episode of the podcast. And that was PG responding, me too. Wait, I'm the one that needs to finish it today.
And like I said, it's not a big deal. Well, I don't think it's a big deal because the other podcasts aren't as quick. And it's the last show. It's not like you got to watch it before the next episode. Yeah. I mean, listen to it, whatever.
We hope to finish it by the next episode.
I know. That was my job.
No.
Does anybody have any last thoughts on episode 10, the grand finale for Game of Thrones season one?
Yay, Game of Thrones.
Hey. Cannot wait till next year.
It was far better than I had ever hoped when I saw that the announcement that they were going to do it. So, all right, I'll watch season two.
Well, I was going to say, and you'd say that because this is not the last episode of the podcast. There will be a few more at least.
Yes, we have two more.
And some special things. So there will be a wrap-up of overall thoughts of the entire season and process. And then the super-duper spoilerific episode that's been promised with special guests.
To our listeners, if you are an actor... on the show, somebody that works with the show, an extra, whatever, if you happen to know somebody in the social media world, anything that has to do with the podcast, you can email us and we would like to hear from you because I'd like to do some things in between the end of the series and the beginning of next season just to fill things out.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, so I guess we will say goodnight. Thank you, co-hosts. PG, I hope you saved the world. Otherwise, there's no point in editing this podcast.
If the world's still here tomorrow, edit the podcast.
And thanks to our listeners for checking in with us again. Please leave comments, feedback, complaints. You know we can handle them. You'll find the info in the outro. Thanks for listening.
Thanks. Bye.
If you'd like to send feedback to Beyond the Wall, you can email us at btw@specficmedia.com. That's btw@specficmedia.com. Or you could send us a voicemail at 704-315-5884. Or you can comment on the web. Go to specficmedia.com and there you'll find a shiny little button to click on that'll take you right to our page. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported license. Feel free to share and remix. Just give us credit and don't charge money for it.